Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Every time I fall asleep, I have the same horrifying nightmare. A flashback of what we went through. In the dream, we're back on Zangrath again. Everything is just the way it was, and my heart aches for reasons my sleeping mind can't comprehend. My wife and I are holding hands, walking through the quiet streets downtown, window shopping and sipping coffee. And then, the ships begin to drop from the sky. Massive, skyscraper-sized towers, their twisted hulls gleam in the twin sun's glow as they appear like fingers of an unseen gargantuan god reaching down through the clouds. Screaming erupts from all around, and I squeeze my wife's hand so hard she has to slap my arm to make me realize I'm hurting her unintentionally. I release my vice-like grip, and she shakes her fingers out to regain circulation, still looking up at the sky with wide, horrified eyes. Racing back to our home, we don't think rationally. All we know is that the things dropping from the sky are terrifying, and despite the murmurs of those saying they could be coming in peace, it's hard to imagine that it's true. Peaceful diplomats do not invade in such grand numbers. They do not punch holes in the sky with ships the size of cities. My worst fears are found to be true, sooner than I thought possible, as we find out that the aliens are not peaceful. When we get home, the news shows images of death and destruction, weapons like nothing we have ever seen before. One clip shows a ray gun annihilating a crowd of innocents, their flesh sizzling and smoking first, before slowing off and revealing gleaming white bone. The large groups of people turned to skeletons who stood unmoving in the poses of living men and women for an instant before toppling over and turning into a scattered pile of bones. The streets ran with blood and the screams echoed through our window as we hid for as long as we could in our apartment, watching the news broadcasts with increasing despair. Bombs were dropped that turned metropolitan centers to ash. Other weapons spread disease and death through plagues and terrible viruses which spread more rapidly than I ever imagined possible. The invaders looked exactly like us, making it difficult to tell them apart from friendly forces. Their spies infiltrated the government and the military, making our downfall even more complete. We never found out for sure if they were disguising themselves or not. It had never occurred to anyone that if aliens did appear one day, they might look identical to humans. But they did. Even their languages sounded like ours. My nightmare always ends the same way. I wake up as I see my children's faces, blooded and lifeless, killed by creatures from another world who somehow looked just like us. They ransacked our home while they were scavenging for supplies. My son and daughter were both murdered by those monsters. Bolting upright and awake, my wife startled from her slumber as well. The nightmare again. Panting out of breath, I nodded, my skin damp with sweat and soaking the sheet beneath me. "I can't sleep either," she said, getting up. Opening the window shades, I looked out at the stars as they passed by in the distance. "I'll never get used to that view," I said with a sigh, going into the small latrine. "Hopefully we won't have to. There must be a livable planet out there somewhere. The computer will pick up something soon." Regitta was always an optimist. Even after all we had been through, she kept me going. But at that moment, I didn't want to hear it. I was in a rut and wanted to feel lousy. I wanted to brood about our children, and our home, which was stolen from us. Instead, I went into the small kitchen area to make instant coffee for us both, trying to distract myself from melancholy with caffeine for a little while. The powdered milk was gone, and we were down to the last canister of freeze-dried coffee. I opened it up, wincing at the thought of life without the stuff. I felt like I needed it to survive these days, especially with the total lack of restful sleep I'd been experiencing lately. As I was boiling the water, an alarm began to sound. Lights started flashing on the ceiling, and a voice came over the PA system, speaking robotically. Proximity alert, hostile crafts detected. Proximity alert, hostile crafts detected. Recommend evasive maneuvers. The alert repeated again and again, and I raced towards the cockpit, where my wife was already in the captain's chair. She gripped the controls tightly, and I strapped myself into the seat next to her. "It's them," was all she had to say, and I knew exactly how much trouble we were in. My heart pounding in my chest, I took the turret controls and began to take aim and fired a few shots with the meager plasma rifle we had mounted on the hull. The attacks bounced off the enemy shields like ping pong balls. A second later, they were returning fire, and the ship rattled violently. The harness straps dug into my ribs and my shoulders as I was thrown forward in my seat, and it knocked the wind out of me as another impact came a second later, and another, and another. "There's too many of them." My wife was making evasive maneuvers with sharp cuts to the left and the right, testing the ship's integrity and pushing it to its limits. She'd been a pilot in the Space Force for years. If not for her military connections and her skills of flying, we would have died back in Zangreth. I owed her my life in more ways than one. The stolen ship had been given to her by a general in a final gesture of gratitude for her dedicated years of service, as the world exploded to pieces all around us and everyone tried desperately to escape from the invaders' brutal attacks. "Take it somewhere far away from here," the general had said with his last dying breath. "Get as far away as you can." I was snapped back to the present from my reflections as a ship rattled from another brutal impact. "Leave us alone. You took our children. What more do you want from us?" My wife was screaming as she rocketed us through asteroid belts and around deadly quasars, trying to throw them off our trail. The sound of the ship's quantum engines being pushed to their utter limits made a roaring wail of noise all around us. I felt that my eardrums would pop from that horrible noise. If not from that, then surely the exploding blasts of missiles crashing off our shields would deafen me for the short remainder of my life. "We aren't going to make it," she said, looking at the displays with desperation. "I'm going to do something a little crazy here. Do you trust me?" I nodded. Of course I did. There was no one else in the universe I trusted besides her. That was when she banked sharply to the right and began to head straight for a black spot in the distance. Nothing is truly black in outer space, as you realize when you've been flying at warp speed for long enough. Every dark spot is actually a multitude of stars shining back at you, and as you draw nearer, you see them clearly. One by one, they emerge from the abyss. But this was actually pure blackness, I saw as we got closer. There was no shortcut. This was a black hole. The long death, the spaghettifying domain of a dead supermassive star. "Honey, what are you doing?" She looked at me, her eyes wide and fearful, tears beginning to well up in them. It looked like she was about to apologize for something. Or she wanted to. "I never had enough time to finish my research. Remember, I had a theory about black holes, that if you fall into one, you won't be killed. Instead, you'll be transported somewhere else, far, far away." What she was saying sounded impossible. Despite my faith in her, I was terrified. Everything I had ever heard about black holes told me that we would be annihilated by it. That we would be stretched out and spaghettified by it. That time would stand still as we died a million deaths over an eternity of pain and endless suffering. "Vegeta, what if you're wrong?" She looked at me with resolve in her eyes. "We'll die either way." I was about to say that one death didn't involve being stretched out into noodles and dying over a million years in a time void with no oxygen. But it was too late. We were already getting close enough that it began to pull us in. The ship started to quake and shudder as the proximity sensors stopped blaring and new alarms began to sound instead. These ones sounded far more insistent. "They're leaving," she said. "They're not attacking us anymore. That means they know this thing will kill us." She didn't argue, just released the controls as the ship began to skid faster and faster in looping arcs towards the black hole. The warp drive was still engaged, and we sped toward it rapidly. I felt nauseated by the looping trajectory of the ship as time began to dilate, and I started to feel stretched. My body warped and aching with strange pins and needles that quickly turned into ice picks and steel rods of agonizing pain everywhere. As the darkness surrounded us, we were plunged into blackness so total I couldn't see an inch in front of me. I didn't know if I was alive or dead. The feeling of spikes being driven into my skin by sledgehammers began to abate and was reduced to tingling and numbness. I felt nothing for a long, long time as we seemed to float in a void for an eternity. My thoughts became an endless murmur of sounds, which meant nothing. And then, suddenly, there was light again from the blackness. How the two of us or the ship managed to stay together under such forces and such incredible duress, I will never understand, despite my wife's attempts to explain the nano self-repairing technology to me. Suffice to say, if not for the fact that we've been gifted the most technologically advanced small scout craft in the fleet, we would not have survived. But the Pegasus took us all to the black hole, and we came out safely on the other side. We awoke, floating in a sea of stars, unfamiliar to our computer's navigation system. It struggled to recover by mapping out this new place with its sensors. Eventually, we had a rudimentary map of this galaxy we had been ejected into. A spiraling fan of stars with so many chances and places where life could spring up. "They won't be able to find us here," my wife said, gripping my hand tightly from the captain's chair. We began to search for a new planet once again. Scanning these new stars, we found 100 worlds close to being able to sustain life, but none quite capable of it. Too hot or too cold, too large or too small, no water or no signs of life. But eventually, the sensors began to emit a gentle beeping sound, far different from the harsh cries which had alerted us of approaching enemies. The robotic voice spoke over the PA once more, and the computer alerted us to a new discovery. "Class 7 starfaring civilization detected. Do you wish to set a new course for this location?" A few more times the message repeated before either one of us could speak. We were so shocked at what we had heard. We'd been searching for a place to set down roots, a place with vegetation and a chance to grow crops. But we'd never imagined finding a new home among others. Perhaps we could be accepted as one of their own. A newly spacefaring civilization would likely be progressive and accepting of other species. Or so we hoped. "Yes, computer, set a course for the location, please," Regita said, and I realized she had tears streaming from her eyes. "We made it," I said, sensing something was off. "Why are you crying?" "I didn't want to tell you. I didn't want you to lose hope. The engine was nearly destroyed going through the rift. If we hadn't found something today, we would have been left floating out here aimlessly, lost in space forever. We would have frozen to death." We hugged as she shivered at the thought, and I did involuntarily as well. "Well, let's just be thankful we found something. Not just something. Look, a Class 7 civilization. We won't have to start from scratch, living off the land. This is a real home." "Let's hope so." By the time we arrived at the place, we could see lights illuminating the dark side of the world. Regita made for that darkened area of the planet, hoping we could land without being spotted in the night. "The landmass right here," she said in hushed tones as we approached. "They look almost the same as the ones on Zangreth. Regita, do you see what I'm seeing? Look at all the water they have here. All that clean water. I bet they don't even have to ration. She gripped my hand tightly as the craft began to blaze at the front from the heat of entry into the atmosphere. We landed quietly and undetected in a forested area north of a large city. After hiding our ship as well as we possibly could, we began to venture on foot towards the metropolis we call Toronto. It will take us quite a while to get there, but we're still too nervous to attempt bartering for a ride from an Earthworlder, although we have encountered quite a few. At one point, as we walked down the side of the road, heading south towards the big city, someone stopped their vehicle and rolled down the window to offer us a ride. We had been seeing signs which said Toronto 100 kilometers, Toronto 72 kilometers, Toronto 50 kilometers as we got closer. "You folks need a lift," the man said. He had a bushy red beard and short hair, wide shoulders and a thick neck. In short, he appeared quite capable of incapacitating both of us and murdering us in cold blood. Or he could have also passed for my uncle. It was impossible to tell the difference, I realized, unable to speak. My mouth was hanging open, and I backed away from the truck window, terrified for reasons I couldn't understand. The man drove off a few seconds later, as my wife was unable to suppress her horror as well. We were both somewhat surprised to find that you all looked just like us, and subsequently, just like the invaders who killed our children and brutalized our planet. In fact, we're both terrified right now that you could be the latter of the two species. One of your kind left this black rectangular device on a table in a food-eating establishment, and I picked it up and began looking through it, claiming it as my own in accordance with Zangreth's Finest Keeper's laws. We're desperate, so we may need to sell it for sustenance. But for now, I will peruse it for more information on your kind, to learn what type of world we have landed on. I sincerely hope it's a good one.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.